It is a pleasure to introduce our next instructor based in Mumbai, India. Rajiv Thacker possesses over 24 years of experience in various segments of the capital markets, such as investment banking, corporate finance, securities broking, and 15 years of experience managing clients' investments in equities. His tenure at PPFAS began in 2001. He managed the equity investments of the portfolio management service from 2003 to 2013, and since 2013 has been managing the PPFAS Mutual Funds Parag Parikh Long-Term Equity Fund. Rajiv is a strong believer in the school of value investing and is heavily influenced by Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger's approach. He's a chartered accountant, cost accountant, and a CFA charter holder. On behalf of the MOI Global Membership Community, a very warm welcome to you, Rajiv. Please go ahead.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure being here. I'll just take you through the auto sector in India, and we will then look at a company, Suzuki Motor Corporation. It's a description on how we look at the sector and what we see in Suzuki Motor Corporation. But I would urge participants to do their own research and not to take the points discussed today blindly. Again, I'll try to be approximately right, and it'll be a general discussion in the ballpark rather than go into very precise point estimates. So let's get started. Mary Barra, the CEO of General Motors, has said this. She said that the auto industry will see more change in the next 5 years than what it has seen in the last 50 years. And the reason for saying this is that numerous changes are happening in the auto space, which is creating quite a bit of turmoil. One thing, of course, is well known today is that all along automobiles have run on internal combustion engine, and today there's a big move towards electrification on account of various reasons. One of them being the environmental factor, and again, down the road, it could be cost efficiencies or moving away from oil dependence and its associated geopolitics. We have also seen this big shift towards autonomous vehicles, and we had this unfortunate incident where we have seen the first fatality in the autonomous testing. But nevertheless, various companies are doing research in this area and are doing field testing. Companies like Waymo, which is part of Alphabet, Google, Uber, Tesla with its own limited version of autonomy, and various other companies are working in this field. The other trend which has been prevalent is the rise of app-based service providers like Uber and Lyft and Ola in India. Again, you have various companies in China and in other parts of the world. So this has been a relatively recent phenomenon. What all these three things are doing, electrification, autonomy, and ride-hailing and ride-sharing, are doing is that there is going to be a lot of business model innovation. So there is talk about how in the future you could see automobiles being provided as a service rather than as an asset purchase. So people could maybe subscribe to a certain number of miles on a monthly basis from a company, and they would not own the asset, and they would have access to vehicles and mobility virtually on demand. And there's an interesting video on YouTube, and also He's written a couple of books, so you can check out Tony Seba's video on YouTube on what is happening in the renewable space and in the auto space. So having seen this background, let's look at where the various auto companies stand today. And essentially, when it comes to auto companies, today it's a situation of value is in the eye of the beholder. So at one end, you have General Motors, which is, and these are, this data is a few days old, of course, with the current volatility numbers are all over the place, but General Motors broadly trades at a market cap of about $53 billion. You have Tesla, again, which sometimes crosses General Motors market cap, sometimes it's below it, but last it was about $58 billion. So at one end, you have this traditional incumbent, General Motors, which has been around for many, many years, which sells on a group basis, I think, more than 10 million cars a year and is a profitable enterprise and which has about a $53 billion market cap. And you have a Tesla, which is essentially promising the new age and which is, as is well known, run by Elon Musk and has this vision of electric cars taking over the world. So one can bet on either camps, traditional auto or the new age. What we will be looking at is the Indian market. So in India, you have a company which a lot of people outside of India may not have heard of. It's a company called Maruti Suzuki, which has a market capitalization of close to $41 billion. Now, this is very, very surprising that it has such a large market cap as compared to, let's say, a General Motors, whereas the number of cars that Maruti sells is only about 15% or thereabouts of what General Motors sells in a year. Again, cars in India sell for a lower price and are smaller cars and with less features. So revenue would be even lower as compared to that of General Motors. So turnover basis, it would be about 8 to 10% of what General Motors has in a year. So that is the surprising part. Why should this company be valued so much? After Maruti, we look at Suzuki Motor Corporation, which is the parent company of Maruti in India. Suzuki has a market cap of about $26 billion. So the investment hypothesis for Suzuki rests on these four pillars. And if participants think that any of these four pillars are not valid, then the investment case does not hold true. Then one should ignore the whatever is being said today. The first part of the hypothesis is that there will be a significant amount of volume growth in India. Hello.
Hello,
Hello.
Rajiv. Yes, hi.
Yes, I think I think we lost connection in between.
Yeah, could you please continue, maybe start again with this slide and we will edit the audio later.
Sure, I'll do that.
Thank you.
So the investment hypothesis for Suzuki rests on these four pillars. Participants who are listening to this presentation, if they think that any of these four pillars do not hold true, then whatever we are discussing today should not be taken that seriously, and the investment case would fall apart. So the first part of the hypothesis is that more cars will be bought and sold in India in the years to come, and we will see a significant amount of volume growth in the Indian car market. The second part of the hypothesis is that Maruti Suzuki will be a significant part of the future, and it is a company to reckon with. The third part of the hypothesis is that even in a situation where somewhere down the road we move away from internal combustion engine to a world where electric cars dominate, we could have a situation where certain companies focus on car manufacture, whereas they outsource the battery cells. If that is not the case, and if it becomes a prerequisite to manufacture battery cells, then maybe incumbents would lose out. And finally, we'll look at why it makes sense to buy the parent company Suzuki rather than buying the subsidiary company Maruti, which operates in India. So let's look at the first pillar of volume growth. Why do we see volume growth being there in the Indian auto market? So when people argue that the global auto market is at a saturation point, and with ride sharing and ride hailing, and with companies like Uber, we could probably see a decline in the number of cars manufactured and sold, they are primarily talking about the developed world. So this is a slightly dated slide. It's pertaining to 2016, but not much would have changed significantly since then. So as you can see in the slide, in United States, for example, there are 808 vehicles per 1,000 people. So for every man, woman, and child, there are probably 0.8 vehicles in the US. A comparative number for India is just about 22. Now, this is even low, even when we compare the number with the emerging economies or countries which are not that rich. So China, of course, is richer than India, but in China, you have a number of 102 vehicles for every 1,000 inhabitants. And we have seen how the Chinese market has been growing, and there has been a lot of volume growth in China. Given that India is on path towards GDP growth and towards becoming more affluent, there is a strong possibility of a lot of volume growth being there in the Indian market, and we are also seeing signs of that in terms of the numbers that are coming in. So when we are talking about this number of 22, it is relating to cars and not all personal vehicles. So some people may know that in India, a lot of people ride motorcycles. And if we include that, then the number would be closer to 130. However, as India's growing affluent and as more people are able to afford four-wheelers, we are seeing more cars being bought and sold in India. Again, the rise of companies like Uber, Lyft, Ola is a factor which is discouraging car ownership in the developed countries. However, the impact in a country like India is somewhat different. It is, in fact, increasing accessibility and people who cannot afford to buy their own car are able to write these services as and when required. So in fact, it is helping the number of cars in the country increase. And as these become more accessible, these are gaining over the traditional what are called auto rickshaws or tuk-tuks in the cities in India. And a more formal car, which is air-conditioned, is gaining market share. Again, as the world is urbanizing, as India is urbanizing, the public transport is lagging behind the needs. And that's where personal transportation in terms of personally owned cars or ride-hailing services come into picture. And we have seen last year growth in excess of 9%, and that is expected to continue for quite a few years down the line. Coming to the second part of why to look at Maruti seriously and why not any other company which operates in India. So this is the market share chart for India, and essentially in India, Maruti accounts for every one in two cars sold. So it's Maruti which has a market share of somewhere around 50% over the years, and rest of the market is split between everyone else. And in between, you can see a dip in the market share of Maruti. At low, it had gone to as low as 43%, and they have strongly rebounded from that. The context to the dip in market share in the past was that two things were happening. One was that diesel was gaining market share in India, and Maruti for some time did not have diesel engines. And that is reversing course now. Maruti also has diesel vehicles, and the market itself has again shifted back to petrol. And the other factor was that somewhere around 2010, 11, 12, foreign automakers were getting aggressive in India, but they have realized that they have been unable to run a very profitable operation, and they have been losing market share, and some of them have even exited from the Indian market. So let's see how these people have done. So the traditional auto biggies like General Motors, Ford, Toyota, Volvo, Volkswagen, all of them have tried to enter in India, but they have not been able to gain traction, gain volume, and some of them have exited the Indian market, and others have scaled down their ambitions and operations quite significantly. So General Motors, for example, has exited the Indian car market. So the question arises is, why does Maruti dominate the market, or why is it in a duopoly kind of situation, equivalent of a Coca-Cola in India without a equivalent Pepsi? So Maruti is 50% and everyone else is 50%. Why is that situation there in India? So one is that it has to be realized that the Indian car market is different from car markets in the other countries. So there is a great emphasis on value for money and the capital cost of the car. One cannot just simply recreate the models that are working well elsewhere and try and sell them in India. They have to be relevant for the Indian conditions. And some of them can be as simple as a higher ground clearance, given that the road conditions are not that great in India, and there are some potholes or water logging. So one is, people have to focus on value for money and also focus on relevant models. The other thing is that import tariffs are quite steep in India. So whichever manufacturer builds cars in India has a big advantage over people who import cars or import a significant amount of components. What this does is that people who have already achieved scale benefit. Now, a new entrant has to take that gamble and set up manufacturing capabilities without having the assurance that they will be able to sell what they manufacture. So, foreign manufacturers who have tried to set up base in India and who have been importing components have been at a big disadvantage in the Indian marketplace. And Maruti in India had a more than a decade head start over the other players like General Motors, Fords, and so on. They started in early 80s, whereas the other foreign players came in 90s, mid-90s, or even later. So the head start in terms of setting up manufacturing facilities, dealership networks, service networks, that is there with Maruti. Again, India is among the few countries where we drive on the left-hand side of the road, the steering wheel is on the right side, and it requires a certain amount of adjusting the car model for that. The other thing is that if people try to replicate the foreign models in India, they again are at a cost disadvantage. Now, world over, airbags are a very significant component of the safety aspect, and usually people prefer having those in the vehicles. India is a strange country where people do not even wear seat belts on the rear, on the in some of the seats, and in a lot of cases they actually have the seat belts removed, which come pre-installed. So there is no way that people will pay for airbags, and people will always prefer a cheaper car model. So again, value for money is a big factor in India. Also, driving speeds in India are typically slower. You have narrower roads, which are not in that great shape for speeding. So the speeds on the Indian roads are slower than what one sees elsewhere. A factor which people consider while buying a car is the service network and reliability. Anecdotally, so this is my own personal experience. I was driving a Honda, and in a remote location, something went wrong, and I couldn't locate a service center to fix the car. Whereas in a similar situation, a Maruti dealer would be there, or a Maruti service center would be there to get me up and running. Finally, I had to go to a Maruti center to take their help and get my car running. So, given the more than a decade head start that Maruti has had in India, they score on this aspect, and others have not been able to match up with them. In fact, for used cars, Maruti cars get a better price as compared to other brand cars for the same mileage and same age. So that is another factor which works in favor of Maruti. They also have this trade-in program where existing customers can trade in their old cars and buy a new one, and the company sells refurbished cars with a service guarantee. Gradually, some of the people who are more affluent are moving to costlier cars and bigger cars. Maruti has been leveraging its advantage into entry-level cars to gain market share in the premium cars also. So recently, what Maruti has done is that they have created a separate brand for the premium cars called Nexa, and they have separate showrooms for that, and that has also been gaining good amount of volumes. So in fact, if this separate premium brand were to be a different company in India, that would be the number three automaker in India. So from a recent start, that has gained a good amount of traction. And finally, they are locking into major dealerships in prime locations in various cities and competitors are in fact finding it difficult to gain entry in terms of gain good locations for setting up their dealerships. So this is almost like a McDonald's occupying prime real estate in most locations. Again, this company is recognizing the fact that somewhere down the road you could see electric vehicles taking off in India. So what they have been doing is they have started some work. They have started work on fully plug-in electric vehicles as well as hybrids, where they would run part of the journey on batteries, and in case charge runs out, then there's a backup internal combustion engine. So they are working on keeping the overall car cost low and making appropriate models for India. So the important thing to note about Indian market is, even if one were to see that electrification will take off in a big way, our market is more akin to, let's say, the Chinese market, and a company like BYD would be more relevant for the Indian market as compared to something like a Tesla. So we will not have the super premium cars or cars with a lot of features and huge amount of range and things like that. We would be having a car market where the cost of the car would matter significantly, and even lesser range would be an acceptable compromise for the Indian market. So the parent company of Maruti, which is Suzuki Motor Corporation, has set up a joint venture in India, and where they will be manufacturing batteries for use in electric vehicles. So they have already started work on moving towards this direction. The battery cells will have to be imported, so those will not be made in India, and it is quite likely that most EV manufacturers in India will outsource battery cell manufacture, and they will be importing the same. So the thesis is that, just like in, let's say, cell phone manufacturing, you can design and brand phones, and you can outsource the manufacturing of chips and processors and batteries and screens. Similarly, my feeling is that in cars in India, you will have the traditional auto companies focus on vehicle design, safety, servicing, and things like that. And the battery cell manufacturer, given that Indian car market, at least for now, is not that big, battery cells will be imported for a while, and only when a certain amount of scale is achieved that people will start setting up battery cell manufacturing in India. So we may not have gigafactories coming up in India very soon. That will be somewhere down the road. Again, my view is that we will not see the traditional car manufacturers withering away, and only the new manufacturers like Tesla taking away the entire market. We have seen the difficulties that Tesla has had in terms of scaling up manufacture, and the likes of Nissan and General Motors have introduced electric vehicles of their own. So again, even somewhere down the road, let's say 5 years, 10 years from now, it is quite likely that Maruti will make the transition and be a player in the electric car market as well. So that brings us to the last piece as to how does one go about investing in the Indian auto space if one is positive on the growth aspects. So Maruti Suzuki has done quite well in terms of profitability. Their profits have gone up 3x in the last 4 years, some amount of margin expansion plus volume growth. There has also been a shift towards premium segments, which earn them better. And sometimes there has been this strange situation that they haven't been able to manufacture enough cars as compared to the demand that is there. So we are seeing good amount of volume growth and earnings traction here. However, the stock is not cheap. It is quite expensive, especially when one considers the valuations of something like a General Motors or a Ford or a Nissan. So that brings us to Suzuki Motor Corporation. This is the parent company of Maruti. It owns roughly 56% of Maruti. And not only does it get a 56% profit share from its ownership of Maruti, it also gets a royalty on every car sold, so which does not go to shareholders of Maruti, which comes directly to the shareholders of Suzuki Motor Corporation. So if someone is investing in Maruti, they do not benefit from the royalty payments. They do not benefit from the motorcycle and marine business of Suzuki. And again, the joint venture that Suzuki is setting up in India for the battery unit, and they have also set up an export unit, those benefits don't come to Maruti shareholders in India. So apart from the 56% of ownership in Maruti, they are also players in the Japanese market, in ASEAN countries, European Union, and China. And they have, apart from car business, they have a small motorcycle business and marine and power products. So let's take two different valuation approaches to Suzuki Motor Corporation. Firstly, we'll try and value it independently and without considering the valuation of Maruti. And in the second approach, we'll do a sum of parts in terms of how much is the stake in Maruti worth and what is the balance business worth. So as we saw, Suzuki has a $26 billion market cap, and they, in the last financial year, earned a profit of about $1.65 billion. So roughly two-thirds of it comes from India, and the remaining is from the rest of the business. So the profit share of Maruti is 0.64 billion, and plus they get royalty of 0.41 billion. And it's available at a price earning ratio of about 13.5 as compared to, let's say, 35 for Maruti. So again, given that it's a company which is growing sales volume significantly, especially in its Indian operations, it has seen its profits double in 4 years, and it's a company with pretty decent financials in terms of return on equity and growth rates and so on. So this is the way their sales have grown over the past few years, and the breakup of revenue across various geographies. So as you can see, the bulk of the profits are coming from the Indian markets. Now, as and when the other markets were to turn around or start contributing more, that is a potential upside. But right now, we are not paying too much for the other markets that they operate in. Those are not very profitable for now. So it can be seen as a participation in the Indian market with the optionality of the upside in the other markets where they operate in. Again, we discussed this. They have seen their net income grow over the years, and the payout ratio is not very high given that they are having some amount of capital expenditure to take care of the volume growth that they are seeing. But on a net basis, they do not have any significant amount of debt, and there's plenty of cash flow that comes their way, part of it which goes towards a capital expenditure. If we were to look at it as a proxy of proxy to holding Maruti, then Suzuki has a market capitalization of $26 billion. The value of their 56% stake in Maruti itself is worth close to $23 billion. So for a net value of, let's say, $3 billion, you participate in the royalty income from Maruti's Indian operations, plus you get the all the other businesses effectively close to free. So that's basically the investment thesis for Suzuki Motor Corporation. And John, I'm done with the presentation and I'll be happy to take questions.
Rajiv, thank you very much for such a comprehensive presentation and also for going into the industry in such great detail. That was very educational. We always like to ask about capital allocation and whether you agree with management's priorities on that front, or whether you would like to see them prioritize anything differently.
Sure. So given that they are seeing significant growth opportunities in India, the management's stance of investing in the battery plant in India and investing in the export plant in India, that is a very rational capital allocation decision. And the dividend payout ratio of about 15% should be reasonable. So given that their business generates a decent amount of return on capital, it is better for them to reinvest in the business when opportunities are there rather than try to pay it out. So I'm happy with what they are doing on capital allocation.
And could you elaborate a little bit more on management incentives or any stock ownership that's of note?
So the family has been running the Suzuki Motor Corp. It's a owner-operator kind of business over generations in Japan. But over a period of time, obviously, the family stake has been coming down and institutional ownership has increased over the years. But the Mr. Osamu Suzuki has been at the helm for many, many years. And it is only recently that he's taken a less active role and passed on the reins in Suzuki Motor Corporation. So the management has been having a very long tenure and they have stuck around and guided the company over the years.
If someone were to consider investing and or tracking this as an idea, what would be some data points perhaps one could look at and track to either validate or challenge your thesis?
I think one key factor would be market share of Maruti in India. Is that holding steady or is that declining? That would be one. The other factor would be that the 9 to 10% kind of volume growth that we have seen in the Indian auto market, whether that continues or not, that would be a data point to track. The third thing to track would be developments in the electric vehicle space. And is that a longer term disruption or is that a very near term thing? So that is something to be monitored. And the other thing is whether incumbents make the transition to the new technology or whether it will be a completely different set of players who will gain in the electric car space.
And perhaps lastly, if you could talk a little bit about how you discovered this idea and maybe more broadly about your idea generation process.
Sure. So in terms of idea generation process, firstly, we do not try to capture every stock upside that is there in the marketplace. We have a defined universe in terms of the number of stocks that we track, and that list is updated once every year. What we consider when including companies in our coverage universe is management quality, capital allocation, the return characteristics in terms of return on capital ratios, and growth prospects of the business, and whether we can understand the business or not. So Maruti is a company we have been tracking for a long time. Given that Suzuki is its parent, it was only logical to look at Suzuki as well, and especially given the fact that Suzuki was seeming to offer a very compelling valuation point as compared to the Indian auto space. And yeah, that was the starting point essentially to look at Suzuki.
Wonderful. Well, Rajiv, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us and share your insights as well as the idea with the MOI Global community. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you, John, for the opportunity. Pleasure being here.
And to all of you listening, do feel free to follow up with Rajiv with any further questions. Also, feel free to follow up with us, and we will be happy to facilitate an introduction. Goodbye for now.